Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction, starring Score baseball insider Bruce Levine and half of Chicago's number one sports morning show, David Haw, on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Good morning, Chicago. Welcome inside the clubhouse. I am David Haw with Bruce Levine, and we are here in the Hyundai Score Studios until 11 o'clock this morning, talking baseball as we do each and every Saturday morning, 52 weeks a year. And today, we are marking a solemn, significant anniversary that helped reinforce baseball's role in society. Today, we will commemorate that anniversary when our country changed forever 20 years ago today, September 11, 2001. Baseball was one of the many paths, Bruce, that Americans took on the return to normalcy, one of the ways back to sanity and one of the outlets to make us feel better, helped our country mend and heal. And in some small part, it felt pretty big at the time. And we'll talk about that. We'll talk about Chris Bryant's return to Wrigley. We certainly will talk about Carlos Rodon's strong start at Guaranteed Rate Field on Friday night, and whatever else you want to talk about, 312-644-6767. But Bruce, I think we talk about the anniversary because of its significance and because of the role baseball played then and now in helping us feel better about things and the outlet that it represents.
Well, you're right, David, and good morning to you, and good morning to all of our great listeners out there as well. And it is a somber day, and I think just like very few occasions in our lives, you remember exactly where you were. If you were a young growing up child or an adult on 9/11, exactly when you got a call from somebody else that said, "Turn on CNN," that was prevalent and going on all over the entire world and our country for sure when the planes hit the World Trade Center and our lives and everyone's lives in the United States were changed forever. And you're right, baseball did play a very minor but significant role in the healing of our country, and it continues to do that 20 years later as all 30 teams will pay tribute to the fallen people from 9/11 and the tragedy that occurred that day today, with the many different ways of handling the tribute to the people that we lost that day.
Yeah, the Cubs and Sox both play later today, and they will both, you know, take the moment and commemorate the occasion and bring attention to the fact of what happened. And people do remember vividly. Obviously, it's one of those times you'll never forget where you were and how you felt at that instant. And then we pivot to baseball, Bruce. This is a sports talk radio station. This is a baseball show. And you remember that the White Sox were in New York, miles away from ground zero, if you will, playing the Yankees, scheduled to play the Yankees, and then they had to take buses out of town later that day or the next day. The Cubs obviously interrupted. Neither team in baseball came back until September 18th. Hmm. And it was until September 27th, you'll recall, that the Cubs returned to Wrigley Field for the first time. And Bruce, as we get ready to kind of reminisce and look back at that moment specifically, what do you remember about the Cubs' first home game at Wrigley Field, September 27th, 2001, when it would become a night to remember?
Well, just the initial part when the game began and Sammy Sosa initially ran out and ran out to his position in right field like he did every game as a Chicago Cub, running full out to the fans in right field and greeting them. But this time, instead of just a wave, it was an American flag that he hoisted up in the air, and the crowd went crazy. It was a shocking and beautiful tribute that I think everyone responded to. And then later on, he did some more magic.
Sammy hits a high fly ball, deep right center. Back goes Merced to the wall and right, looking up, leaping. That Sosa has hit one into the basket just to the right of the 368 sign. He's carrying an American flag around the bases, and the Cubs lead 1-0.
Pat Hughes on the call, as always, never sounded better. Sounds the same today. And that was a moment, Bruce. That was a moment as Sammy Sosa homers. If I recall, and maybe this is the way legend has it, but the wind was blowing in and people didn't necessarily expect him to hit the home run. And yet there it was. They were watching the ball sail out of the ballpark. And next thing you know, Sammy's rounding first and he's got a little American flag as he rounds the bases. And everyone was like, well, what in the world? Where did he get that? And as we would come to learn later, it was Billy Williams coaching first base. And Billy Williams had prepared for this moment and had the mini American flag in his sock. And he handed it to Sammy as he rounded the bases. And it was one of those highlights you never forget. And on a day like this, you want to remember because it does reinforce baseball's role in society. But, Bruce, that was quite a moment. And who would have thought Sammy, the master showman, and you remember back of just how good he was at that part of the job, he performed and he made people feel better. And it was almost like a visceral reaction to people applauding and roaring in the of the crowd. What a moment.
It did also transcend sports a little bit because of the fact that Sammy, a Dominican player, showed his tribute to this country that he did so well in and became a citizen of, along with so many others that, like all of us, that came from somewhere else originally and became Americans. And that was a true American moment displayed by Sammy Sosa with that great tribute. And it was scripted by Billy Williams, but, no one knew for sure except Billy Williams in his mind that Sammy was going to hit a home run and that flag was going to be taken around the bases. I mean, that is just, that is unbelievable legend.
Now, Billy Williams is the master of anticipation. You don't hit what he hit without having to understand what goes on in a baseball game. But come on, Sammy hit 64 home runs that year. It was a pretty safe bet that he was going to hit one that night.
Well, that's a fair point. He was in the midst of hitting home runs, and it became almost like a yawn after a while because he's the only guy to hit 60 home runs or more three times in three different seasons. And I'm doubting that'll ever happen again, but you never say never. But I think getting back to the point with Sosa and Cub fans, it resonated way beyond Cub Nation that night,
yes.
I think. So we are taking all your reminiscence as far as how baseball impacted that time for you at 312-644-6767. That's our show theme today, 2001 and the tragedy in New York, and how baseball helped you get to a point of healing as we moved on.
Yeah, call us, text us, let us know. We are here for you. We will talk about other things, certainly, but if you want to chime in with what you remember and just what role baseball plays for you, that's a good way to put it because it means something different to everybody, Bruce. And as we kind of sift through this today, we want to also let people know we are planning to talk to White Sox pitching coach Ethan Katz later in the show around 10 o'clock and in the 10 o'clock hour also, welcoming in an old friend, Joe Madden, the Angels coach, former Cub manager. I'm sorry, coach. It's the Angels manager, not a coach. The Cubs legend.
It's your Notre Dame background, David. There's nothing you can do about it.
Joe Madden at 10:30 and plenty of other conversations along the way. But, Bruce, as we kind of look at the present as we appreciate the past, yesterday at Wrigley Field, talk about emotions. That was an emotional day for Cub fans, for Chris Bryant. It really hits you when you see a professional athlete come back and wipe tears away because he was touched by the moment, and that's what Chris Bryant did as he was honored before the game. And it was part of a day that I think probably tested his ability to focus because he said it was difficult afterward. Bruce, you were there and you were asking the right questions, and you have been there since the beginning with Chris Bryant. Just wanted to kind of see what you will take away from yesterday and what you thought about the way that Chris Bryant really handled himself in a way that I think surprised nobody who has gotten used to the classy guy that he is.
Well, Cub fans aren't going to like to hear this, but this is the happiest I've seen Chris Bryant in 3 or 4 years. And the reason I say that is he didn't want to leave the Cubs. He never did. He was traded because there was not an agreement that was to be made between the Cubs and Chris Bryant on a long-term contract. But as far as his loyalty to Chicago, the organization, and the fans, it remains, you know, today, a love story between the both sides. It'll always be that. I don't think it'll ever be anything else. David, at times, I think people will allude to the fact, well, you know, money got in the way of this, baseball contracts, the business of baseball got in the way. But that can't take away what he meant to the franchise, what he meant to this organization, how as a person and as a baseball player at the highest level. So with all that in mind, a very happy Chris Bryant returned to Wrigley Field and was very emotional about the events of the day, including just walking into the ballpark originally through the right field concourse and not knowing where he was at. He admitted he had never been on the right field concourse because the Cubs clubhouse is on the left field concourse. He had never even been there. And when he walked in, people were, you know, there were people outside, there were cameras outside. But when he walked in, he tried to pretend, he said, that he knew where he was going, but he didn't. So he was looking around, smiling, waving at everybody, and then at the same time going, where in the hell am I going? I don't know where this clubhouse is. And it was typical of Chris Bryant of being, you know, the honest, straightforward guy that I grew to really enjoy being around and admire over the time that I covered him from, well, really 2013 until he left on July the 29th.
And it was typical of the refreshing transparency that he continues to show, especially when talking about just how emotional Friday was for number 17.
Weird, but at the same time, it's like there's a lot of new people over there too, so it's like, I don't know, it's a little bit of both. Like, I obviously played a lot of years with a lot of those guys, and coming through the right field fence here, and I had never even stepped foot on that side of the concourse, so I was lost. I had no clue where I was going, and all these cameras in my face, so I was like trying to play it off like I knew what I was doing. I had no clue. But no, I don't know. It's still so new too, so it feels like I was just here.
He's happy, Bruce. I agree with you. That's an interesting observation. As happy as you've seen him, why wouldn't you be happy? You're on a team that is the best in the National League. You have World Series aspirations. They're using you in ways that reflect your versatility. I think that you look at the Giants and we saw how dangerous they are and his role in this. And it was great to see, and I think it speaks to the kind of person Chris Bryant is and teammate he can be. When they were honoring Chris Bryant at home plate, the Giants were not disinterested participants, the team kind of just waiting for this to end. His teammates were on the top step, and they were watching him get praised by the crowd and wipe the tears away from his eyes to see what that meant to him. And, you know, this is a good fit for Chris Bryant, and I think it spoke to just what he means to the Giants to see their response to what was going on the field.
Well, outside of Buster Posey, who's a superstar from at least 2 to 3 championships with the Giants, the other players on the Giants, a lot of them, you know, pretty new over the last few years, they were pretty much in awe of the idea that there were 7 cameras there and 20 reporters, and you know, there was a mic stand for all the microphones. This is an important man in Chicago history. This is one of the great players in Major League Baseball, and I think for his teammates, looking at the response, the only thing that I could surmise out of all that, David, was, wow, he's one of our teammates and he's helping us, but man, he was really something here. And there was some shock. in some of the eyes to, of those players to see what a big deal and how important Chris Bryant was here.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Bruce, but I think he almost brought out the best in Kyle Hendricks, who was as sharp as he has been in a long time. It wasn't the reason that the Cubs lost 6-1. Hendricks was actually pretty good, especially it seemed like he was locked in during KB's at-bats. It looked odd seeing number 23 step to the plate instead of that familiar 17, but it was something that I think Kyle Hendricks, he looked like he was pretty sharp and responded to the moment. After that, the Cubs bullpen, they kind of got, you know, the Giants did what the Giants do. 6-1 victory over the Cubs, and they're back at it today here on the Score and at Wrigley Field. And the Giants are going to, you know, they're going to be one of those teams that look very, very difficult to beat in the postseason.
Well, the Cubs are playing better teams here soon. They've done a nice job of winning 7 out of the last 9, and it's been a nice story. You know, the Schwindel stories and the Wisdoms and Ortegas and the resurgence of Ian Happ. But this, you know, this was something that took over the entire day, and it was interesting to be around. I got to talk to Chris a little bit with one or two other reporters before he had his get together with all the media, and he just talked about how he rented a house in San Francisco. It's only 10 minutes or so. Well, no, it's a little further from the ballpark, but it's toward the Oakland area, and how cold it is in San Francisco. And he said, they tell me the nicest month is October. Said, I'm hoping we're in the playoffs, and they will be, of course, and that it's warm weather, and it usually is in San Francisco. But just hearing this guy that we got to talk to every day for the last 7 years talk about another experience in another city, it was a little eye-opening, and it was interesting. And he was pretty laid back. He was happy to be back in Chicago, and happy to be here. And also said, you know what? I love it in San Francisco. I loved it here. I'm not putting any teams off as far as where I will come back to. And that's a whole different subject altogether,
yep.
David. But in reality, as he said, after he said that, he said, yeah, I guess it'd be pretty stupid if I said I wasn't going to come back.
Of course, he knew exactly what to say and how to say it. He is a Scott Boras client who has been trained well. And you know what, Bruce? We will get to some of those implications later about the possibilities of Chris Bryant returning to the Cubs. But he may be returning to Chicago in October anyway. Who knows? Maybe the Giants and the White Sox. Maybe Chris Bryant's at the plate late in the game. Or maybe he's facing Carlos Rodon in a key high leverage moment in the World Series. Wouldn't that be something? Giants, White Sox, Carlos Rodon gave White Sox fans reason to consider he's back. He looks like the Carlos Rodon, the pitcher that you want to see, the pitcher that you have seen most of this year. Last night in a victory over the Red Sox, good victory for the White Sox, quality win 4-3 over the Red Sox. Rodon goes 5 innings, gives up 3 hits, 1 earned run, Bruce. And I think more importantly, you saw the velocity. It maybe wasn't exactly where, if you average it out, where he has been the rest of this season, but you saw him reach back and get it when he needed it. He only went 5, but that's all they need now. Very impressive return for Carlos Rodon.
You know, again, it's been fun watching Rodon, who's was drafted in 2014 and been with the big league team since 15, although injured many of those years. Just be able to go out there and pitch with what he has that day and get people out. That shows you the quality of stuff he has. Because earlier in the year, if you remember, David, he was dominating people. Yeah, he always has that wipeout slider, but he was hitting 98 on a regular basis, okay? He was wiping people out. Now he's pitching after this shoulder inflammation that occurred a couple weeks ago. Now he's pitching a little bit lower as far as the MPH goes, about 93, 94. But as you mentioned, David, when he needed it, he went back and he got 97, 98 when he needed it to strike somebody out. So very impressive the way that Carlos Rodon has learned how to pitch. Give them 5 right now. That's all they need, yep. You know, going toward the playoffs and get that shoulder in shape for postseason.
Carlos Rodon struck out seven, and this is what he said about his outing afterward.
Better than last time. Below was a little tick up, which was good, but just went and attacked and got through five today.
Tony said that they pushed you today and it get through the five innings. How did you feel as your outing went on?
Yeah, I mean, the third inning I had to reach back for a few. Got the strikeouts that we needed. Fourth was good, try to get some quick outs, but I mean, they put together, I think, three or four at bats that were 8 to 10 pitches that worked my pitch count up. So they did a pretty good job with that. But I'm happy they let me go out for the fifth.
Carlos Rodon, Friday night after his five inning outing, Bruce, were you convinced they were going to let him come out for the fifth? Because as I was watching, I wondered, you want to watch his innings, you want to watch his pitches. He started so well. He was very economical with his pitches in the first inning or two. They kind of rode up there a little bit after in the third. I wasn't convinced they were going to let him, but I like him, I was relieved, not relieved, but I guess I was encouraged that they let him come out for the fifth.
Well, at the top of the hour, we'll talk to Ethan Katz, their pitching coach, and he'll give us the deep insight as to what went into that thinking. But Tony La Russa, after the game, David, talked about the fact that they felt he had enough in the tank and that he earned that fifth inning so that he could get the win. They were, you know, normally these days, it used to be that managers pushed to get a pitcher through five innings so they could be entitled to the win. Wins don't mean as much as far as pitchers' records go anymore. So it's about winning the game that matters most to the managers. But in this case, La Russa made a point of talking about how they thought Rodon, by the gutty pitching that he displayed out there, deserved to win that ball game and deserved that fifth inning. And he got through it, and it did turn out to be a win. We'll discuss a little bit more about it because I thought it was that game was everything that the White Sox have to be a world championship team going forward.
That's worth exploring. It was a big moment for Rodon. It was a big day for Chris Bryant. It is a big Chicago baseball weekend with the Red Sox and the Giants both in town playing the White Sox and Cubs respectively. And then maybe we know what it means to us. We've talked about it. Maybe it's a big day for you listening at home. 312-644-6767. What do you remember about the way baseball helped America heal 20 years ago as we mark the anniversary of September 11th this morning? This is Inside the Clubhouse. You're listening to Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Sammy hits a high fly ball, deep right center. Back goes Merced to the wall and right, looking up, leaping. That ball is gone for a home run. Sammy Sosa has hit one into the basket just to the right of the 368 sign. He's carrying an American flag around the bases, and the Cubs lead 1-0.
Welcome back inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I am David Haw with Bruce Levine until 11 o'clock. That was the voice, the familiar voice of Pat Hughes, who called the home run on September 27th, 2001. Sammy Sosa hit the home run. That was the Cubs' first home game after 9/11. They came back, and Sammy, as we have been talking about, carried the got the American flag from Billy Williams, rounding first, and he carried it around the bases in a highlight that is etched indelibly in the minds and memories of Cubs fans. And it's time now to go out to the Score guest line, brought to you by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. And that is where we find a man who played 111 games at third base on that team, a man who sits next to Pat Hughes now on a regular daily basis, Ron Coomer, our very own. Good morning, Coom. How are you?
Good morning, David. Bruce, how are you guys doing today?
Doing great. Thank you for joining us. Just let's start here before we get to what happened yesterday at Wrigley. What do you remember about that highlight you just heard, and what do you feel when you hear that highlight?
Well, it's I remember the play like it was yesterday, you know, because none of us really knew that Billy had the flag in his pocket, right? So Sammy hits the ball, and it just makes it into the basket. It's a high fly ball. And then all of a sudden I look up, and there's you know, you see the ball go in the basket, and I look at Sammy, and he's getting the flag from Billy, and it was, you know, it was pretty amazing, to be quite honest. You know, to have that thought of doing that was good, and you know, it was a really hard time for everybody, right? And you know, we got back to playing. I remember we went to Cincinnati, played, but we got back to playing, and when we got home, and fans, everything. You didn't really know how to react to a lot of things, other than extreme patriotism at the ballpark.
Coombs, how do you think baseball has responded in the last 20 years since then? There'll be 30 teams all paying tribute today in many different ways, and just the way that baseball responded to it all and helped with the healing.
Yeah, I thought very well. I did it. You know, we took some time away from the game, did not play for a little bit, and then when we came back, you know, I thought our country was ready to have us play. Think fans are ready to have us play for the most part. I remember the playoffs. That was very good. You know, and it being in New York, and then I played for the Yankees the next year. So opening day the next year, you know, we did a special, a very long pregame ceremony in 2002. To open up the season about what had happened the year before. So I thought baseball did a pretty good job. I really do. You know, how do you, you know, it was something that was brand that had never happened before. And we just didn't know totally what to do, but I thought they, you know, the patriotism came through loud and clear.
Yeah, Ron, I mean, I think today we get the sense players and these topics are so widely discussed and we know where people stand on pretty much everything these days. But I wonder, right, 20 years ago, what it felt like. You were a member of a Cubs team that, you know, was in the midst of a lot of things at that moment, and all of a sudden all of our lives were interrupted for a few weeks and indelibly affected for many years. And from a baseball perspective, was there this sense that you wanted to get back on the field, or as players, you know, that you didn't come back until September 18th? So there was a week where there was so much uncertainty and conversation, and I'm sure mixed feelings. So somebody who was going through that, what do you recall about maybe some of that ambivalence, some of those mixed emotions that certainly were probably being discussed internally, but everyone sort of had their own point of view?
Well, I think at the very beginning, David, when we were here in Chicago, there was just concern of safety, right? I mean, it was unbelievable. You know, I lived in Lincoln Park, not far from the ballpark, and you could hear the fighter jets circling the city, you know. And so I think everybody was still in shock and making sure that everybody was safe. You know, I remember walking in the downtown area, and the downtown was empty. Absolutely empty the next day. And talk about eerie. That was, you know, for someone who grew up here and you're accustomed to seeing people everywhere in the downtown, to having nobody there and it being blocked off, that was a wow moment for me. And
Kuma, I remember the first workout, I think it was either that Sunday or Monday.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the fact that we were living right at that point in a no-fly zone in our country for the first time in history, where no airplanes flew for the first, I don't know, 3 to 4 days, just to make sure that everything was locked down and security was right. And talking to Don Baylor and a few of you guys on the team, after that workout, and it was the eeriest feeling, like it was almost like a Twilight Zone episode. Just the quiet and the unknown. What was that, getting on an airplane the following, it was 3 or 4 days later when you went to Cincinnati, What was that feeling like? Because afterwards, people didn't fly in general for a good period of time, you know, after those incidents occurred.
Well, it's kind of funny because Paula ended up wanting to go to Cincinnati. She did not want to stay here by herself. So I went to Don and I said, hey, you know, Paula wants to drive to Cincinnati after the workout here. Would you mind if I just drove with her? And he said, no, that would be, you know, that'd be fine. You know, so we were going to drive, and you know who heard me asking Don that is Joe Girardi. And Joe, who didn't like to fly anyways, now he was really that you know, he did not want to get on a plane. And Joe drove with us to Cincinnati. So we drove to Cincinnati, and then the first flight I was on, Bruce, was the flight, I believe we went from Cincy to Houston and played in Houston then after that. And I'll tell you, it's weird, but I had some knee issues, and my knee walking into, so the first flight I was on went to Houston with the team. And then when I got to Houston, I had a big chip of cartilage in my right knee, and my knee locked up. And so I had to fly back to Chicago by myself commercial. I was on one of the first commercial flights, and I went through Houston Airport in a wheelchair because my leg couldn't move. And I'm telling you, there are 20 people, 30 right. people in the whole airport.
Yep,
100%. That was very, very bizarre. And you talk about looking around and, you know, just, it's just, if I didn't have to fly home to get my knee scoped, there's no chance I would have been flying commercial like that. I was just, it was a weird, weird time, right? And nobody was in the airports, nobody.
Ron, before we let you go, and I really appreciate your time, it's a busy day and a busy weekend, but I know you and having a family with your father was in the Air Force and a respect for the military. And I just wondered, you know, everybody carves out their little slice here, and ours is the sports world and baseball specifically. How you always consider, we began this talking about patriotism and how baseball is an expression of that for a lot of people and helps connect maybe their lives in ways that you don't necessarily plan on or ever imagine. How do you consider, you know, the link between baseball, patriotism, and some of the things we will see today throughout Major League Baseball as all 30 teams commemorate this anniversary?
Well, I think baseball has done a good job, right? I really believe each day at every ballpark, we do something to honor a military person at our ballpark, at every ballpark. And I just think so many people have given up so much for us to live the way we do that I do think, I do believe baseball has done a good job. I think there are times we probably take that a little bit for granted, and a day like today might shake us back to reality, you know, of going, you know, there's so many people that give so much just so we can walk around and smile and go to Wrigley Field. And you know, so today will be a good day. It'll be a good day to just think back of how much sacrifice has gone on and how much, you know, devastation happened in one, you know, a couple quick moments.
In closing with you, Akun, just get one in on the return of Chris Bryant, your thoughts about the tribute and Chris returning after being traded a month ago.
Well, I thought it was a great, you know, great tribute that the Cubs did. I thought, you know, the video was outstanding. And to be honest with you, Bruce, he'd be a pretty easy guy to do a tribute video for. He's done a lot of good in this in a Cubs uniform. So they
no problem with highlights, yeah.
There's no shortage of highlights for KB with big moments. So I was happy. I thought it was needed, right? Because when the trade deadline came, K KB and Riz did not get to play the last game here, if you recall. I'm sure you do. And then we traveled, and KB gets told on the field, where were we, in Washington? It was right. Him in Washington. So, you know, it was unfortunate that they didn't – we all knew what was coming, but, you know, fans didn't get to, you know, say their goodbyes. So I thought it was a very good tribute, and it was needed, and I was glad they were able to do that for KB.
You're the best, Coom. Thank you for getting up this morning early. Have a great call this afternoon, Cubs and Giants, and appreciate you taking the time.
Yep. I will see you boys at the ballpark here soon. You guys have a great
Ron
day.
Coomer. That's great. The guest here on Inside the Clubhouse, you know the voice. It's next to Pat Hughes every day. Does a terrific job here on the score. And by the way, 12:45 pregame, Cubs, Giants, Zach Zaidman with the call here on the score, leading the way to Coomer and Pat Hughes.
In closing this subject out right now, and we'll continue to take reminiscence of people's thoughts on the tragedies of 9/11/2001 and your thoughts on baseball and its healing. I was on a flight to Houston to cover the team. The team was in the hunt for the playoffs that year, and they had had a horrible loss a week before in Miami, where Tom Gordon, their closer, came in, gave up a big home run a walk-off home run to the Marlins that basically ended their run. They were toast after that. I think they lost seven out of the next nine and fell out of it. But I was also on a flight from Chicago to Houston. There were 14 people on the flight, David. And I looked around and it scared me. Okay, I wasn't happy about going on the flight, but you know, we were covering the Cubs in a playoff run. But when I saw 14 people on and the looks on the faces of the people that were working on the plane and the pilots that came back to say hello, it was one of the eerier feelings I've ever had.
That's what Bruce remembers. What do you remember? 312-644-6767. Also, what'd you think about the Chris Bryant reunion or Carlos Rodon's outing last night? Strong start for the White Sox at Guaranteed Rate Field. Let us know. We are inside the clubhouse here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
One thing's for sure, you know, the Red Sox are really working hard to, and they're staying close in that wild card race. And you know, we wanted to be sure that we were playing just as hard. And we did. It was really an outstanding game.
It had to be a fun game to manage in the sense of not fun, but the fact that you pulled out all stops from the sixth inning on, including a defensive move, and you basically got four saves.
Well, believe me, I like those games, you know, where you get so far ahead you can't mess them up. But no, it's a tribute to their offense. They just kept plugging in. They kept putting us in situations where we had to go to the next man up.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. I'm David Hall, Bruce Levine, until 11 o'clock. That was the voice, of course, of Tony La Russa. Bruce, fun to you, work to him. I know what you're going at. That was a fun game to watch. Didn't sound like it was a fun game to manage.
I think it was because if you think about it, you know, Tony La Russa at age 76 has been destroyed earlier in the year. Not so much the last part when they've had a 10-game lead for the last couple months all the way through. For not being, you know, too old, probably not being able to be prepared for games like this. So in this situation, he really managed three innings ahead. He brought in Bummer to get out Devers in a very important part. He brought in Adam Crochet to get out Schwarber in a very important 6th, 7th, 8th. Then he brings in Kimbrel in an important situation. So when I said four saves in a row, it was four saves in a row that he prepared for from the 6th inning on with Bummer, Crochet, then Kimbrel, and then, of course, Hendricks. It worked to perfection, and that's why he gave that response. I prefer we have those blowout games where I don't have to worry about anything. Right. But I think it was a quintessential Hall of Fame Tony La Russa managing that game three innings ahead, and it, for the most part, working out. Obviously, Tapera gave up a couple of runs in between there, but
not
getting
ideal.
Their big hitters out, David, getting Devers out and getting Schwarber out with potential tying and go-ahead runs on base, all of those innings, I thought that was a spectacular game for the White Sox.
I like the way you look at it. Four save opportunities. If your starter gives you five, as Carlos Rodon did, and striking out seven, giving up just three hits and a run, you have four individual innings that are save opportunities for whatever reliever you go to. And certainly the Sox have their options. They have a deep bullpen that should be, let's go back to March. Let's go back to April. That was going to be the strength of this team, right? Best bullpen in baseball. Aaron Bummer says we should be 95-0 if we have a lead. That is by design. Also by design, Jose Abreu driving in big runs. Big home run last night. They beat a good team. Red Sox playing for something. They're clinging to that lead in the wild card standings in the American League. That was a quality victory. The magic number now 12, Bruce. And every game you get closer to the end of October, you start to get that sense of the intensity is ratcheting up.
Yeah, the schedule, unless the White Sox can go on a winning streak here and Cleveland goes on a long losing streak, it appears they're going to clinch on the road, okay? Because they have a lot of road games coming up after this homestand. So it appears, you know, the following week, I'm thinking it could happen somewhere around the 23rd, 22nd, 23rd, depending on whether Cleveland hangs in there. And Cleveland, by the way, having lost an entire rotation and their manager, have hung in there to play 500 baseball. So on a given night, they still throw out their tremendous young talent starting pitching-wise, and they are not a sure thing to lose on a daily basis. So projecting exactly when this would happen, a little bit difficult, but somewhere in the 20s.
Take a shot. 23rd would be good for me. How about you?
It's fine. You know, I would prefer they do it at home if they can, but I don't see it the way the schedule is breaking out right now.
Let's see what Ethan Katz thinks. The White Sox young pitching coach will join us next here inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.